Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. The show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as 1798Part2.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that has the only constitutional solution in getting the federal government into compliance with the Constitution. And it's been a long time since they've been complying with the Constitution. I will let you know that the lines are going to be open today, and the phone number is 215-867-8255. That is Top Talk, 215-TOP-TALK, for those who like to add a little phonetics to it. Today's a big day. Today is payday for some of the work that we've been doing in Wyoming. I have four legislative districts that I have candidates in, and I'm hoping to get, I'm going to get at least one. And if we can, hopefully we'll walk away with three. That would be a very good day. The fourth one, it is going to be tough, but who knows? I might actually do a sweep, but we won't know until tomorrow morning sometime what the outcome of that election will be. But this is the only show, as you know, that has the constitutional solution. And that's why we focus on dedicating this show to the state legislators who are willing to commit to protecting their citizens from federal tyranny. And a part of this show and a part of my dedication for this show is really going out to those grassroots leaders, the central committees in each county or legislative district, so that we can help them start centering on the Constitution. I believe most of the good people that are involved at the grassroots level want to see the GOP refocus their the party and their platform and everything on the Constitution. But unfortunately, people don't realize how far off they are from really focusing on the Constitution. And so that's one of the things we're doing. I'm actually going to be going through the National Republican Party platform as well as the Democratic platform so we can do some comparing and contrasting, as well as identifying how we can get the national platform in alignment to the Constitution. That way we can actually start suggesting that state platforms be converted into a two-tiered platform, one for the national and one for their own state. I think that makes sense, doesn't it? Anyway, I will also tell you that if you want to download the podcast, those podcasts are available at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Just go to the it's reclaimingtherepublic.org, and you'll want to go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast. If you want to hear my local flavor, then go to the KSBN podcast on Reclaiming the Republic, and right there you should find all my local shows that I have in Spokane and so forth. So anyway, you're more than welcome to download those podcasts and listen. You can hear me kind of browbeat and poke the local businesses in Spokane in the eye quite a bit, because I'm very focused in trying to get people to start stepping up and supporting the not the Republican cause, but the constitutional cause, and trying to get them to shift their focus towards the Constitution, as I've been saying. A unique thing about this area, just so if you didn't know, there is the largest market of employment in this area is healthcare. There's probably well over 20% of the people employed here are employed in healthcare of one form or another. So that's kind of big. And that's because Spokane actually services healthcare needs for people from as far as probably Montana, maybe the Dakotas. We've had people come in from Alaska. It's the biggest city in between Seattle and Minneapolis. And there's some news about Minneapolis that I'll talk to you about. That'll be, just in a few minutes. But still, if you if you understand the healthcare market and industry, because that means there's a lot of doctors here. I like telling the doctors that it's their fault that we have Obamacare. And they kind of look and they scratch their head and go, well, how's it our fault? And I say, well, it's not like you didn't recognize the shot across the bow when Hillary said she was going to create socialized health care. And that should have put some fear in you. And that should have gotten you to start spending a little money and making sure that the people that, you know, are going into Congress, that are going into the state legislators, are constitutional and for free market and not free health care. And so they kind of take, you know what, that's an interesting perspective. I guess you're right. And I go, yeah, I'm right, because this is a self-governance form of government. And if we are to be self-governed, then we have to take an active role and as well as responsibility for being governed and or getting making sure that those who are governing us are doing so with our consent and that are aligning to those things like the Constitution. I said, you know, had you guys gotten it together and started getting active, we probably would not be in nearly the mess that we're in. But and it's not like they don't have the money. They could have easily spent a little bit of their money to do that, and it wouldn't have taken a lot because there's a lot of money in the healthcare industry, I will tell you that. Not as much as you would think. And what really surprises me is knowing what the nurses make in this area and around the globe, or I should say around the country, from California up to here and to the East Coast and so forth. And I see what plumbers make. And I see what, you know, skilled labor makes, you know, like a carpenter, finishing work guy or what have you, how much they make by the hour. I'm absolutely amazed that how little the nurses make, because here's a person that actually understands the orders that a doctor puts in. They understand, you know, the importance of things that you need to do to save your life. And they're not making nearly as much as plumbers and some of these other, and they actually have degrees and so forth instead of, you know, getting, you know, a few years of experience and so forth. So it's kind of interesting how certain markets and certain industries are, I would say, how well they do in the market space for getting compensation. But I will tell you that the nurses, they just don't. And the interesting thing, and I'll throw it out there, is that the nursing industry is one that has been penetrated by the unions. And I am absolutely appalled how poor the unions have been in negotiating and representing nurses. Because bottom line, you can't tell me that what a nurse does and the types of shifts that they work and so forth, it actually is subpar to what a plumber will do for you or what an electrician will do or what a framer, finisher, you know, skilled labor and those types of things. And you start looking across the board at how much, you know, these people are making. I'm absolutely appalled at how little actually nurses make considering the responsibilities that they have. And their licenses are on the line if they make a mistake and so forth. So, and you can't say that about a plumber or a skilled laborer or so forth, because they don't necessarily have the same kind of rigid constraints of continuing education and those types of things. Anyway, and nor do we want that. I would like to see this actually be taken to a free market, but I want to point my finger at the unions, because it is their responsibility. Supposedly, they are seeking the best interest of getting compensation and so forth, and it just seems like they're not doing a good job at all. They're doing a really crummy job compared to all of these other, and aren't plumbers unions, and aren't carpenters, and a lot of these skilled, those are union working jobs too. Why is it that the nurses are getting the short end of the stick? I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't make sense why they are constantly getting a much lower pay, especially if you consider, you know, the CNAs and the nurse assistants and all these different degrees, or I should say different levels of type of health care that you can get. Anywho, yeah, those registered nurses, they're underpaid for what they're doing. And as a matter of fact, when your butt's on the line and you're, you know, in the middle of the night and the only person that's there to save your life is the nurse, I think you'll start to agree with me. Yeah, they do not get paid enough for the type of stuff that they have to do. But anywho, I was reaching out to Taylor Haynes because since he's the only one that signed the pledge, I was hoping to get a read on or from him on how the polling and the election is going, if they've even got, you know, exit polls and that type of thing. I know that they don't have a real good polling process in Wyoming. They probably have a better polling process for the elk and the deer for hunting season and so forth. So anyway, let me just state this, that I did look at the news. I scanned through it. I went through, you know, a great length of looking at different sites. There is no form or sign that the federal government is going to relinquish their unconstitutional roles, responsibilities, and powers and give them back to the states, which means that the states are going to have to do this, which means that you and I are going to have to motivate and engage the state legislators and inform them what their job is, get them to act, because it is only them. They have the power of stepping in and stopping this federal tyranny, period. We don't want them to call for a convention, for an Article 5 convention. We don't need that. What we need is actually them to audit this Constitution. And so we will be, obviously, that's what we cover here. And obviously, I'm at a hard break. So I will be right back after a word from our sponsors. So thank you so much. And again, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And so that dialogue, let's start off with Chelsea Clinton. Seems like she's... Was there any doubt that the prodigal child from the prodigal parents are, it would even consider trying to get into the public fray and try to leverage off of the damage done by those two? Like, everybody is going to forget. The problem is that there are way too many people on the left that still look at them as a royal family, and they have no clue how the Clintons have sold us downstream. I would invite you to go to my, actually it's on my KSBN website, not my KSBN website, my KSBN podcast page. If you go to Reclaiming the Republic and hit my KSBN podcast page, and you go all the way down through my podcast, at the very end, at the, almost the very bottom of the page, I have this little snippet. It is the actual testimony to Congress regarding the Bill Clinton timeline of corruption, where he was receiving money from Chinese spies and Chinese corporations and so forth. But most of this was coming from spies, people that were here, Mokhtar Rady and some others, that were actually getting appointed into positions by Clinton or under his administration. And the interesting thing is that the two reporters that had done this timeline, their names were Curry and Windrum, W-I-N-D-R-E-M, Windrum. And they actually identified how Clinton was literally giving away technical, strategic, national secrets to the Chinese for every little bit of money that they were giving them. And it's, and it was really sad if you look at how much he gave them. He gave them the Loral technology for ICBM targeting, and he only got like $100,000 or something like that for that type of technology. Are you kidding me? I mean, I've seen better spies do even far more, or do not nearly as much damage, but be able to get far more money from Russia and a lot of other people. The fact is that he was literally giving away all of our secrets to China, the nuclear enrichment and so forth. Do you remember Los Alamos, that hard drive that disappeared? All of that was put together in a timeline, and this was testimony given in 1998. They should have tried him again for impeachment for treason, but they never did. And had they done that, that would have put the nail in the coffin on the rest of the Clinton crime syndicate or the crime family, whatever, because it is a family that has a culture of corruption through and through. And the whole foundation, everything that they've been doing since, it just reeks of corruption. And the fact that here she's actually thinking, yeah, go ahead, we'll be able to obfuscate and blur and not be able to tie you to all of those other things. Like, come on, really? Acorns don't fall far from the tree. And where did she get her moral compass? From her parents, period. Let me move on. According to Tim Bolz on Fox News, and this is a Fox News channel as or in a website on or a domain in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And basically, I'm going to quote him. He says, "The Muslim community is celebrating one of its holiest days, Tuesday, and they're inviting everyone to join them from 6 a.m. to noon at the U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis." This is the same place where the Minnesota Vikings play. And if you look at some of the previous EIDs, that's what this is, EID ul Adha. It's a celebration in honoring the prophet of Abraham, or not Abraham, yeah, prophet Abraham. But it's interesting, if you look at some of these other celebrations of the same, that's where they kill goats and all sorts of things. And I'm just wondering if they're doing livestock slaughters right there on the you know, the 50-yard line for the Minnesota Vikings or what have you. The organizers and attendees are all gathering for a prayer as a part of the celebration in honor of the prophet Abraham, who is the key figure not just to the Islamic faith, but to Christians and Jews as well. And so there's some truth there, but that is when, this is prior to Muhammad, who came along, you know, what, over 1,000 years later, much longer than that. I think it's like 2,500 years later was when supposedly Muhammad came along. And all this time, it was a well-known fact that the tribe of Ishmael, or the descendants of Ishmael, who was the son of Abraham, they were never to have the priesthood, so they would never have a prophet. And so all of a sudden, a true miracle happened because they had a prophet without the priesthood, which if you understand the consistencies of the Abrahamic covenant and Mosaic laws and covenants and so forth, it boggles one's mind to think that the priesthood could even exist outside of that. As a matter of fact, it goes against biblical teachings that the priesthood could exist outside of that line of authority without some form of reinjecting. And Hebrews 5 and Hebrews 7 talks very specifically of how Christ had brought the priesthood back into his fold and centered his church on the priesthood. And I invite you to go read that, because that's an eye-opener as to understanding how just no one, because it clearly states, I think it's in Hebrews 7, that no one can take this honor upon themselves, that they have to receive it from someone, whether it be by birthright or from somebody that actually has that priesthood, and Muhammad clearly didn't. So it poses the question as to the priesthood or that authority supposedly that Muhammad had claimed for himself. And I'll just leave it there for people to start academically looking at that and going, that's an interesting question. Anyway, I'm not sure how many people have been following Amazon, and I'm sure that those people who were buying Amazon in the 90s kind of sweating what the heck was going on, because they were unable to turn a profit for well over a decade. One has to kind of look, and there was a really good article that talks about this, but I kind of want to give you the a backstory as well as some different perspectives on this. But you got to remember, Amazon was a company that was allowed by the government. If you look at how big it was allowed by the government. It was even traded on the New York Stock Exchange without producing a profit. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you were able to create a company that would just continually take on debt and take on debt and not be able to turn a profit, would the federal government allow you to stay in business? They shut people down left and right all the time if you can't turn a profit within 5 years, right? Isn't that correct? At least that's what my CPA tells me. So here's the question. Why is it that they were allowed to stay in business? Well, they were providing a real critical service. They were actually, as Amazon opened up their doors, they created a service giving to the CIA everything you look at and everything you buy from them, because they knew that they had a business model that they were going to literally take over by being the storefront for everybody. And in doing so, they would actually be able to collect data on almost everybody. Almost everybody buys from Amazon now. So every time you go on Amazon and you log on, and even nowadays, even if you don't log on, they can keep tracking you because they have that great technology now. They actually report what you've looked at, what you've considered buying, and actually what you have purchased. And I don't know if you'd heard, but the Echo or their Dot and some of their technology that's actively listening to you, as well as their TV and so forth. The interesting thing is there was actually a raid, I think it was in Kansas a few years back, where they broke in because there was a crime being committed, and they broke in to arrest the people without getting a warrant, because Amazon had tipped the local law enforcement off, and they just went right in. So the fact is that they have been spying on us, and that's why they've been critical and allowed to maintain their relationship or even maintain their business because of this unique relationship that they've had with the government. But here's a real kicker that you didn't know. About 2010, 2011, the government came along and awarded Amazon a no-bid contract to become their cloud computing resource for all of the government's data. What does that mean? That's almost like Halliburton. Remember how everybody went around because a Chinese company with Halliburton got this no-bid contract, and how that was just, the epitome of evil? How many people have been talking and clamoring about the no-bid contract that Amazon won and is making billions of dollars? And I'm not talking about billions of dollars just out from the federal government, but they're making billions of dollars that, you know, go beyond what you can even think of. And they're actually getting you to cover a lot of their costs. But I can't get into that right now because I'm coming up on a hard break. So when we come back, I'm going to get into how well Amazon has been milking you, the customer of a lot of different utilities and so forth, as well as the government. I mean, you're paying for a lot of Amazon services, and you're probably even paying for their Prime service as well. Maybe you'll think about that again when we come back. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. Okay, so here's one of the things I read out of a LinkedIn article, and I actually have it on the Mobius Strip Press page, where they're talking about actually commingling all the different classified levels and all the different data that they're using for the Amazon cloud services for the government. They're all out there in the same spaces that they provide the same Amazon Web Services for companies like Verizon, Major League Baseball, Comcast, and so forth. And I will just say that in this last second quarter, they grew their business, or they grew it by $6.1 billion. And so they're making a lot of bank. And I remember listening to some people that were on this contract that were actually, you know, Amazon was complaining that the government wasn't paying enough money. In other words, the government wasn't subsidizing their free market business. And I'm going, you know what? I can't believe that the government even went to bed with Amazon. But I can, actually, because all the pieces were put into place by the globalists. Because, I mean, look, folks, Apple is a trillion-dollar company now. It's the first trillion-dollar company on the face of the earth. Amazon is shortly behind them. And these companies are huge, progressive, supporting the globalist ideology, the globalist plan and design. and they believe that the state should know everything about you, that you shouldn't have anything to hide, and if you do, they're going to come and haul you away to a FEMA camp. And I don't say those things necessarily in jest, because that is the type of totalitarian state that they have. I mean, this is very Orwellian, 1984 type of thing, where they are literally not just putting cameras on you and watching everything you're doing, but they're literally watching what you're doing behind the keyboard, in your home, and so forth. Because Amazon even owns services like for home security and those types of things. They own a lot of your life, and they are monitoring you, just like those smart monitor voltage smart meters for your electricity company coming into your house, because that thing is monitoring what type of appliances you're operating and so forth. Believe it or not, they actually have the ability to differentiate what type of appliances you're running at a certain time and what you're doing and so forth. Well, anyway, they have this huge data center that the government is using right there in the Virginia area. And Virginia's largest utility, the Dominion Energy Company, recently negotiated with the state legislators to pass on. This is great. If you live in Virginia, you're going to love this. Amazon has been able to convince the state legislators to pass on the cost of running a power line underground to connect to one of the new the company's new subsidiaries to the tune of $172 million. And so this basically is being passed on to you, the consumer, and it's in fees that they just haven't announced yet, but you're going to start seeing fees that you're paying for, and you're going, what? Why is your electrical bill going up? Oh, there's these fees. Oh, okay. I guess that's okay. It is a very insidious plan that they have, and they're getting the American taxpayers, the American people, to pay for this. And oh, by the way, the people that are exempt from these fees are those with, you know, those caveated incomes where they don't have to pay all those types of fees. Only you who make extra money. It is a part of the progressive tax system, taking more from those who have to give to those who have not. Isn't that great? Well, so that it doesn't just end there. In at least two other states, Bloomberg reported that Amazon has negotiated with utilities and lawmakers to force residents to pay its electrical bills on top of the estimated $1.2 billion in state and municipal taxes that basically they passed on to the tax incentives to Bezos and his company as they received over the past decade. In other words, getting Bezos to come into their state. They said, hey, we're going to bring him in and we're going to give him a little bit of a tax break. Well, guess what? They really didn't give him a tax break, because they're passing $1.2 billion on to you, the taxpayers. Huh, isn't that nice? They were giving Amazon the advantage at your disadvantage. And that's how it works, my friends. That is the elitist paradigm. In other words, Amazon has never really paid for anything. They've always been a leech since the very beginning. They couldn't make a profit, but the reason they were allowed to continually rack up debt was because they were spying on you. And the government felt that that was more critical than making them play by the rules that everybody else had to play. And that's the problem when you have the government controlling those types of things. The government should not be controlling the New York Stock Exchange. It should be we the people of New York, controlling that thing, and the states and state legislators. That's the problem when you allow the federal government to usurp those things. So although Amazon isn't the only company to take advantage of the power industry's hunger for new consumers as the largest player in cloud computing, it has the biggest footprint, because in Ohio, the company, Amazon, opened three data centers in 2016, and they're currently operating with electrical rates that are hidden from public view. As reported by Bloomberg, only five representatives on a public utility commission, along with Amazon, only five representatives, along with Amazon and the American Electric Power, know how much is being paid for this public service by you, the customer. Last year alone, Amazon offered to open 12 more data centers, and that is going into the AEP, which is basically the American Electric Power out there in the Midwest. And the AEP exempted it from surcharges and other customers pay. And that's a de facto cost shift that is basically throwing it on to you. And so I'm just telling you folks that as you see Amazon coming and you think it's a great thing because you're saving money, you're not. You're actually paying more money. Your costs would go down if Amazon would have went bankrupt. And you wouldn't be paying all your little fees and our taxes wouldn't be the same. Amazon has been able to get all sorts of their R&D and other stuff paid for by the government and you, the taxpayer. Isn't that nice? It's good to have a company like that out there. Well, before I run out of time, because I've got about 3 minutes, so let me get started on a couple of the Federalist Papers that I wanted to go through today. I went through a few yesterday. I went through one, I think, on Friday. And so this next one really talks about, and it puts into context of the whole concept of the Civil War and contract and the terms of a contract. And this is Madison in Federalist Number 43. And he says, a compact between independent sovereigns, just like the Constitution is, it's a compact between independent sovereigns, founded on ordinary acts of legislative authority, can pretend to no higher validity than a league or a treaty between the parties. In other words, it is not a lifelong enslavement contract that there's only one way in, no way out. It is an established doctrine on the subject of treaties that all the articles are mutually conditions of each other. In other words, one little part of this condition is mutually agreed upon and is tied to all the others, even though there's a dependence. In other words, if you break one, you've broken them all. And that's what he says here, that a breach of any one article is a breach of the whole treaty, and that a breach committed by either of the parties absolves the other and authorizes them, if they please, to pronounce the compact violated and void. Now, the southern states were literally being taxed unconstitutionally. There should have been other ways that the northern states should have gone after the southern states without violating the Constitution. But the easiest thing they could do is to add the abominable tariffs that they threw upon the South, because that's what they called them. I believe that's what Calhoun called them, the abominable tariffs and taxes. And so what ended up happening was that the South said, we cannot survive under these types of taxations and tariffs. They were having to pay more for their goods, and they were losing money on their goods being exported, because they were exporting raw goods, cotton and so forth, right? All these agricultural products that were leaving the South. So their only option was either they challenged the federal government in court, which they already knew that they would lose, or they would secede. And what ended up happening was they seceded. And you can actually go to the Avalon Project, and I would recommend you do that. And you can actually read the secession article that each state put out. There's at least four of them out there. And the interesting thing was that they left the Union over the issue of slavery more than anything else, because they realized that these tariffs and taxes that were being levied on them were being done so because of slavery. Now, if you go back to the 1830s, 1831, whenever the Missouri Compromise was ratified, which was literally an unconstitutional compromise, that actually grew the scope of slavery in the South to a much higher or a larger magnitude. And it was actually going into states that really didn't want slavery, like Missouri. So I have to get back to this when we get back from a break. But bottom line is that Lincoln was wrong. The Southern states could have seceded just based on what Madison said. Madison would have supported that. And I'll get more into this when we get back from a break. We'll be right back. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. And as I was saying, Lincoln was absolutely wrong that this was a contract. There was no mutual submission, that there was no way out of type of contract. Clearly, Madison stated right here that this was a contract or a compact. And on the face of all contracts, it was mutually understood that if one article of the contract was being violated, the entire thing, and it would be up to either of the parties to decide whether they were through with the contract or whether they chose to adhere to and keep it. I'll give you a great example, because if you read the resolutions of both Kentucky and Virginia, when they talked about the federal government violating the contract, that they had, and they exerted their the fact that the federal government, in violating it, gave them the opportunity to actually withdraw however they felt an affinity for the union and felt it was far more important to maintain the union. And what they ended up doing was they nullified those laws. Now, how does a state nullify the laws of taxation from the federal government? Well, especially if it's just one state or a few states, because Washington, during the excise tax rebellion in, I think it was Kentucky or Ohio or wherever it was, where Washington and Hamilton literally got like the cavalry, they got an army together, and they went out there and they actually forced the whiskey makers to pay their excise tax. So they actually used force in collecting taxes. So what they didn't know and what they didn't do was they didn't understand what has been kind of discovered from the Obamacare era, that states are now setting up escrow accounts. So instead of paying the money directly to the federal government, the money was going into escrow accounts, and those states were determining what they were going to pay that they considered constitutional, because states are only obligated to pay for constitutional debts. We're not obligated to pay for unconstitutional debts. And the fact is that we've been lied to and hoodwinked and been sold a bill of goods that everything that they're doing is constitutional. And now that we can prove, and I can prove, that the majority of the money they're spending on all these unconstitutional programs is unconstitutional, then that means that the states do not have to pay taxes for those things. And that it would literally, and there's actually precedents. Bob Schultz pointed out that the state of Washington, over some nuclear power plants, this happened a few decades ago. I think it was back in the 80s, maybe it was the 90s, but Washington was putting some new nuclear power plants online. And the cost was way over the estimate and the schedule and everything else, that to the tune that there were, I think, in the magnitude of billions of dollars that were owed. And it was pushed and appealed all the way through to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court actually ruled that you cannot collect money on an unconstitutional debt, because what they ended up doing was they created this entity or these power plants without going through the state constitution and allowing themselves to do that. And so because the state violated the constitution, that the companies could not collect the debt because it was an illegal debt. And so when a party is literally behaving illegally, like the federal government, then there is precedence that Bob Schultz was saying that the debt that the federal government is creating is not a legal debt and does not have to be paid. Now, if China or anybody else just heard the words that I am saying, they would be very apprehensive in trying to buy any more of our debt. That would be interesting, right? Because all of a sudden, people would all of a sudden realize, huh, if what they're doing is illegal, then maybe we don't necessarily have to pay off that big debt. But here's the other side of this, folks, because Social Security is illegal, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't. And that's why in my book, I clearly state that I think we should do our best to try to pay our debts, to be as honest as we can to our debtors, even though it was unconstitutionally done. All of this was done unconstitutionally, but it has been done over such a magnitude of time and under this huge cloak of lies and conspiracies and so forth, that we do owe it to our posterity to try to make sure that we actualize what these costs are and pay these through and pay these down as much as we possibly can. Social Security is one of those things that we need to maintain, not in the only in the payments of, but we need to end that program. And there is a process that Milton Friedman came up with, which is brilliant. You actualize what the costs are, and then you create a tax that actually has a sunset, that when the last recipients of Social Security die off or they no longer need that money, then that money is no longer being taxed. And it literally starts paring down and going down as there's less and less to service. So there's actually a way of doing that so that it doesn't become this huge albatross that actually sinks this republic. And we can be smart and we can be honorable in turning this around, turning our debt around and everything else. The next Federalist paper that I wanted to get through, there's a couple more I got. And this is Madison again in Federalist Paper 46. And he talks about the dispositions of states with the federal government. He says, were it admitted, however, that the federal government may feel an equal disposition with the state governments to extend its power beyond the due limits, the latter, which is the states, would still have the advantage in the means of defeating such encroachments. And that power that they have is the contractual power that they have over them. We can actually shut down the federal government by telling them that they're not getting any more money to running these agencies. We're going to pay off the debt because we allowed these things to happen. I mean, what do you do when your kid steals your car and does property damage? I mean, it was an illegal act. It was your kid, though, so there is some responsibility in an parent-child relationship. In the old days, parents were financially responsible. Nowadays, it seems like the government is trying to take ownership of your children because with HIPAA laws and all of these other things, they have literally moved the line of ownership or responsibility over to the child and to the state and away from parents. Now, that's a bad thing. Financially, that may be a good thing because parents might be able to skirt these responsibilities, but that's a very, very evil thing because now the children is no longer being held by the parents to being taught and being brought up morally and so forth, where the state's stepping in and saying, I'm sorry, you don't have a right to know that. You don't have a right to intercede on the behalf of your child because your child has been given this, this through HIPAA and so forth, these powers. You know, that's why little kids, young women, are being able to get abortions without the parents knowing. They have moved that line away from you, the parents, and that's a very dangerous thing. But I digress because this whole thing really had everything to do with the states in dealing with encroachments, but you see how I go down rat holes. I apologize. The next one actually talks about the same thing, and this is Madison's 46 as well. And he says, but ambitious encroachments of the federal government on the authority of the state governments would not excite the opposition of a single state or of a few states. So in other words, if the federal government started encroaching upon the state's powers, roles, and responsibilities, this wouldn't just kind of create an excitement for one state or a few states, but he says they would be signals of general alarm. Every government, every state government would espouse to the common cause. A correspondence would be open, and that's exactly what they tried to do with the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions, setting up committees of correspondence. A correspondence would be opened, and that means that they would create a committee of correspondence to start talking amongst the states in how to deal and revolt and rebuke their federal government. And plans of resistance would be concerted. The one spirit would animate and conduct the whole. And that they're telling you right there that in dealing with this, this one portion of this Federalist paper clearly points out that the states would then take direct action when the federal government is violating the Constitution, that they would open up committees of correspondence and start working one with another. What I just read is an absolute support of Republic Review and the auditing process of how states should start identifying the problems, identifying the hole, and how to fix the hole. That way, as they start moving forward, they know exactly what they're dealing with and what they have to do. The federal government has far more teeth than anybody really understands and knows. And I would tell you, if you read in Article 4, it talks about treason and the state's power of treason. And I would recommend you go read that. I think it might be Article 4, Section 4, but yeah, I know it's in Article 4, period. And that way you can kind of see how the states can start exerting its authority over the federal government, or more specifically over its congressmen, if you understand what I'm saying. Well, I am G.R. Mobley, and I am reclaiming the Republic, but I need your help, and hopefully educating you and others is the first step in doing so. So we will be back tomorrow with more content. God bless. Have a good day. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.